Predate the 208, Rabbi Jeremy Stanton.
Two interesting things about my Tazria Metzora. It's interesting that if somebody asks you the question as to two consecutive Shabbosos, how many Sidras do we lay in on two consecutive Shabbosos? There are five correct answers. 0, 1, 2, 3, and 4. Let's say Pesach is Shabbos to Shabbos. There's 0. If Sukkos, Shabbos to Shabbos, Shmini Atzeres, there's also 0. And this year, we've now got Tazria Metzora and Achremes Kedoshim together. That's 4 Sidras in 2 consecutive Shabbosos. And you can have any in the middle. There's 1 Yom Tov for 1 Sidra, that's 1. Normally there are 2, and you could even have a situation where you could have 2 and 1, as far as I know. Right. So it's interesting. Let me tell you something else about the date. The date, we're on Rosh Chodesh Iyar. Rosh Chodesh Iyar is 2 days, according to the present calendar, as we have it. Anything I tell you about the calendar, remember, Mi'etz Hashem will stop as soon as Moshiach comes. So don't go around after Moshiach has come saying, oh, we were told that this is how it has to be. It doesn't. It's how it is at the moment. So, Rosh Chodesh Iyar, the 2 days of Rosh Chodesh Iyar, are always exactly 5 weeks before the 2 days of Shavuos. Same days of the week. So we're Rosh Chodesh Iyar is Monday, Tuesday. Shavuos is also Monday, Tuesday. Exactly 5 weeks later. So it's interesting, we're going to split up the 7 weeks between Pesach and Shavuos into 2 weeks and 5 weeks. Sfira, the Avelos of Sfira, officially starts now. Yes, Sephardim can have all the whole time, but we know that the last 2 weeks have been the month of Nisan, and the month of Nisan is not really a time for Avelos. So whereas, yes, one can do certain things, but in general, the minhag, I would say, I don't know if minhag Anglia or minhag Chutz La'aretz, the minhag regarding the Avelos is between tomorrow, the 2nd of Iyar, and 17th of Iyar, the day before Lag BaOmer, that time, we all seem to agree. There's no difference in the minhag at all. It's Avelos, and we don't have anything, the haircuts and weddings and music, between the 2nd and the 17th. We all agree on that time. Last week, it's Nissan still. Some people do keep, some people don't. And then after Lag BaOmer, then some people have, some people say no, we've done all the way till Lag BaOmer, and afterwards it's back to normal. So in other words, it differs, minhag differs in different parts of the world, different kehillahs. But this period of time, from the 2nd till the 17th, is definitely time for Avelos because of Sefira. So if you think about it, that the 2 days of Rosh Chodesh are the beginning, and the 2 days of Shavuos aren't the end, because it's Yom Tov already. So it's 5 full weeks. Where are we starting? We're starting now. Since the whole of Sfira is especially getting ready for Kabbalah Satorah. So if we use these 5 weeks of times where we are restricting our natural happiness in life, that when the Monday and Tuesday come along in 5 weeks' time of Kabbalah Satorah, we will be ready on the Madrega to receive the Torah and then go back to our normal, everyday, happy activities with Torah, having had a time to prepare. Rav Torah, when we have a double Sidra, everybody knows that the rule is you do the 2nd of the 2, which is a lovely rule, which doesn't apply the whole time. Nitzovim Vayelech is always Nitzovim. We never do Vayelech on when it's with Nitzavim Vayelech. It's always Nitzavim. Because Nitzavim Vayelech is always when it comes the Shabbos before Rosh Hashanah. Always. You can't have Nitzavim Vayelech any other time than the Shabbos before Rosh Hashanah. And Nitzavim is one of the seven, the last one of the seven, Shiva, De, people say Nechemto, it's Nechemoso, as the word comes in Kaddish, Shiva, De, Nechemoso, it's the seventh one, the last one, and it comes then, and that's the Haftorah, whereas Vayelech is one of the two Haftorahs of Teshuvah, and Vayelech always comes, the Haftorah of Vayelech will always come in the Aseret Yemei Teshuvah. Always come then, whether we do Vayelech then or not, the Haftorah comes then. So that's not Vayakov Pekudei. Interestingly about Vayakov Pekudei, we had Vayakov Pekudei split this year. So the difference of when do you do Vayakov, when do you do Pekudei. Funny question about Vayakov Pekudei itself. If the two siddurs go together, which Haftorah do we do? The answer is, when Vayakov Pekudei come together, we never do Vayakov or Pekudei. It's either Parshas Poro or Parshas HaChodesh. You've got double siddur together, you don't have the first, don't have the second Haftorah. You always do the Poro HaChodesh. And anyway, so this week is Hazira Betzorah, we do Betzorah. Next week is Achrimus Kedoshim, we do Kedoshim. But no, we don't do Kedoshim. What is Kedoshim? There's about three different opinions in the Achronim as to what do we do for Kedoshim. Kedoshim is the rarest Haftorah of the lot. We don't do Kedoshim very often. I spoke about it last time we did it, I think it was last year. It's very rare you do Parshas Kedoshim. Whenever you do Achrimus Kedoshim, we always do Achrimus. Anyway, so but Tashir Metzorah, we always have on, well, when Metzorah is Shabbos HaGodol. When a Tua splits, it's a leap year. When it's a leap year, Metzorah is either Shabbos HaGodol or the Shabbos before. If it's the Shabbos before Shabbos HaGodol, no problem. It can't be anything else. It's after HaKodesh and before Shabbos HaGodol. So it's just Metzorah. And when we have the two together, it's always now. Always now in the beginning of Iyar. That's when we have Tazria Metzorah, and then we do the Haftorah Metzorah. Let me talk about the Haftorah Metzorah. You've got a time in Klal Yisrael where the Northern Kingdom and the Southern Kingdom. The Northern Kingdom is after Shlomo HaMelech died, Rechavam became the king, but the majority of Klal Yisrael, 10 Shavuotim, did not want Rechavam to be the king. They made rebellion against him under Yerovam, and what happened was the kingdom of Yisrael got split. The Northern Kingdom under Yerovam, 10 Shavuotim, called Yisrael, and the Southern Kingdom was called Yehuda, and that was just Yehuda and Binyamin. Kohanim and Leviim lived in different places. They had cities they lived in. A lot of Kohanim lived in Yerushalayim, but the Klal Yisrael were divided around the land, and the majority of the people lived in the Northern Kingdom. Now, the Northern Kingdom had about 20 kings each. In the course of 400 years, they each had around 20 kings. In the Northern Kingdom, every single one, Tanakh calls him a Rosha. Every single one did Avodah Zorah in the Northern Kingdom. And there were about seven different dynasties. That means a dynasty is when a son is followed by a father. Or even you can have a dynasty where there's a father, and then the father only lives long enough to be knocked out by the next king, and then there's a new dynasty. There were seven different dynasties in the 20 kings of Malchai Yisrael, whereas in Malchai Yehuda, there was one dynasty. Yes, occasionally they had other people, but there was one dynasty of David HaMelech's children, right from David HaMelech right through. Zerubbabel, who was a ruler in the beginning of the Bayis Sheni, was a Melech HaBeit from David HaMelech. In other words, and that's going to be, Mitzvah Moshiach comes, we will have Malchai Beis David. So, in the Northern Kingdom, we have a king called Yehoram. Yehoram was the second son of Achov. Achov was definitely a Rosha. Achov was definitely a Rosha, and I'm going to tell you, I'm going to use an interesting word. Achov was a Jewish Rosha. Right? Achov married Izebel. Izebel was Bas Esba'al Melech Plish. I can't remember what nation she came from. Right? Apparently she converted, although I find that very difficult to understand how she could have converted, because she came from a family of Odeh Avodah Zorah, and she remained an Ovedes Avodah Zorah, and her husband was Oved Avodah Zorah. So the idea that she actually had a Gil Kahalokah is very hard to believe. Very hard to believe. She had two sons, Achazi and Yehoram, despite their lovely Jewish names. Nevertheless, both of them became kings of Yisrael after their father, Achav, and both of them were Rishoim. And here we have the second of the two, Yehoram, who became the king. And, well, he realized, see, Avodah Zorah wasn't as straightforward as you might think. We think of Avodah Zorah, let us imagine, you knew somebody, a Yid, who chas v'sholom, spends his time, he goes to church. Right, he goes to church, or he goes to a Buddhist shrine, and he worships there. Well, he's out. Totally, utterly out. You think the man keeps Shabbos, thinking he's kosher? Think his clothes are checked for shatnas? Think his wife goes to the mikvah? If he goes, that's what he does, that's who he worships? Avadanisht. Of course not. But in the time of Tanakh, the Yetzer Hara for Avodah Zorah did not mean that you didn't keep Shabbos. Let's face it. Your Yetzer Hara is to do different things. How many people have you ever met who break all Taryag Mitzvahs? All 613. Come on. Must be something he likes doing. No. I do the appearance I want to do. The other ones I don't want to do. I've got no desire to do it. I'm quite happy having a meal on Shabbos with the family. It's lovely. Right? Shabbos is a good day. Well, you have to do it on Friday. I've got to do it on Sunday instead. What's wrong with Shabbos? I like having a rest on Shabbos afternoon. What's the problem? In other words, we all choose our Averus. We don't go around saying, I am Lechatchilo Da'adafkanik. Find me the Aveira and I'll do it. You know, the man goes to the Rav and says to the Rav, you know, he says, I've broken every single rule in the Torah. Every single one. I challenge you to find one I haven't broken. And the Rav said, committing suicide. I can see clearly from your face that you're still alive. One still to go. Right? So the point is that the Yehoram was the king, but we have Elisha in contact with Yehoram, and Yehoram listening to Elisha. Tell me, Elisha was known to be a genuine Novi, a Novi Muchzak. Absolutely clear. He was a prophet of the Rabbono Shel Olam. Now, does that mean Yehoram tried to kill him? You don't go trying to kill people who you feel are nutcases. He's not going to do any harm. But the point is that Yehoram didn't like Elisha. But they had respect for him because he knew that Elisha was a tzaddik. A tzaddik, gomer, and a novi. How many Nevi'im do we know? We know tzaddikim. Baruch Hashem, Yavdus. We live, we have tzaddikim around. But we don't have anybody who's a novi muchzak, who has got a status of being a novi. Elisha had one, and he came in contact. He spoke to Yehoram. Yehoram spoke to him. Sometimes Yehoram even listened to him. Why not? Just because I like to believe in Avodah Zorah doesn't mean that I'm happy when Elisha, who is the prophet of the Rabbono Shel Olam, well, maybe he's got some good advice for me. Why not? It doesn't mean you go completely overboard. So what happened was there was a famine. There was a famine going on, and Yehoram was very angry with Elisha. You're such a holy prophet. Why can't you stop the famine? Tell the Rabbono Shel Olam, you're a novi, go and find out, tell him how do you get rid of this famine? How do you get the crops to grow? We want rain. But Elisha couldn't say that, I'll give you rain. He couldn't do that. So what happens here is that Elisha says, the people are coming, the soldiers are coming from Yehoram to kill him. Elisha himself says, Shisholach ben hamratzeach hazeh, this son of a murderer. His father was Achav. Achav was known for committing murder, killed Novos Agilodi, his cousin. So his son of a murderer, he wants to kill me. Close the door, don't let him in. Don't let the soldiers in. Right, anyway. So, and then Yehoram gave up trying to kill him. There's no point, because you can't get to him. Right. So Elisha then says, Shimu Dvar Hashem. Elisha says that you should hear, the king should know this, that what Hashem says is, tomorrow, this time tomorrow, literally 24 hours time, there will be in the gate of Shomron, the flour will be a sa'or, will be worth a shekel, and there's two sa'or of that, that's a sa'or of wheat, and there's two sa'or of barley will be a shekel in the Shah Shomron. In other words, it'll be normal prices for the famine. Normal famine prices, the Malbim explains. Normal famine. In which case, that would be okay. What we've been told, it's expensive, but it's what you would expect to get for a famine. Unfortunately, today it can't be sold at that price because we can't have a market going on in the gates of Shomron because we've got an enemy of our rob all around us trying to conquer us. They're outside and we're keeping the gates closed the whole time. We can't bring in any grain. Even the small amount there is, we can't get it. So therefore, Elisha says, don't worry, tomorrow things will be back to normal for the famine. Back to normal for a famine. Right. So then the king's captain says that it's ridiculous. He publicly told Elisha off. He said, even if Hashem, he also knows it about the Zorah, but he says Hashem, and when he said Hashem, he didn't say the word Hashem, he says Yud-Kei-Vov-Kei. He calls Hashem by Hashem's name, and he says that even if Hashem makes windows in Shomayim and makes it start to pour, you're not going to get wheat. How long does it take for it to grow? Months. So there's no way. There's a famine on at the moment. There's no food around anywhere. How are we going to even get the food? The only way you could get so much food in that time is if it rains like mad and the crops grow so quickly, which is absolutely impossible. Stupid. Ridiculous. Which Elisha says back to him, Hincho roi beinecho, you will see it with your own eyes, u'misham lo sochel, but you will not eat from it. And he didn't tell him why he's not going to eat from it, but we find out at the end that he got killed. So, tells you about the Arba'a Anoshim, the four men who were Gehazi and his three sons. Gehazi was, interestingly, I thought of Gehazi as I come through the front door here today. Why is that? Mishnah Sanhedrin. Mishnah Sanhedrin says there were Arba'a Hedyotos. There were four. There are three Melochim and four ordinary people who are Elohim Chayet Olam Abo. In the whole of Tanakh, there are only seven people. The three Melochim, who are the three kings? Yerovam, Achav, and Manasseh. Manasseh was the son of Chizkiyahu. Yeah, a terrible man, but apparently he did Shuvah Machlokas. Tanakama and Rabbi Yehuda. Rabbi Yehuda says Manasseh does have a Chayet in Olam Abo. The Tanakama says no, he doesn't. Or I'm not taking sides on it. So you've got three kings, who were Achav and Yerovam and Manasseh. And you have four Hedyotos. Four Hedyotos are Bilam, Doeg, Achisophel, and Gehazi. What are the Rosh Tevas of Bilam, Doeg, Achisophel, and Gehazi? Base, Dalet, Aleph, Gimel. That's the code at the front door here. Right?
Yeah.
Bilam Doeg. Of those seven people, Achav was definitely Jewish. His wife might not, his children might not, but he definitely was Jewish. Bilam wasn't Jewish. Doeg was, Doeg Adami was Jewish. And you've got Achisophel was Jewish, grandfather of Bathsheba, Shlomo Melech's mother. And you've got Gehazi. It's interesting that in giving a list of the seven people in Tanakh who have Elohim Chayek L'Olam Abo, only one of them is a goy, Bilam. We need to be told about him, he doesn't get Olam Abo. So that means, Rabbi Osai, that Paro gets Olam Abo, that Homon gets Olam Abo, that Sisro gets Olam Abo, that Nuchanetzah gets Olam Abo. Because the only one, no, it's talking about Tanakh. Don't talk about Tanakh. You can't go around proving about Hitler, Yimach Shemo. But about all the people in Tanakh, you've got precisely only one goy mentioned by David Tanakh who does not get any Olam Abo, and that's Bilam. But every other Rosha we've heard of, come on, Nebuchadnezzar, Paro, right? All of them, you named a lot of them. Not a single one is mentioned by the Mishnah in Sanhedrin that this is a person who didn't get Olam Abo. So the four Gehazi was thrown out because the way he behaved with his Rebbe, Elisha, he would have been what Elisha was to Eliyahu, Gehazi would have been to Elisha. But unfortunately, the way he behaved was dishonest, in which case Elisha threw him out. And even Elisha is criticized for being too strict. Chazal criticized Elisha for being too strict. So Gehazi and his three sons were outside. They all became Metzoroim, because after the other, they said after Tazria. Sorry about it, we miss it this year. We miss it next year. Right? So you've got Tazria, you find about Gehazi, about Naaman. And anyway, so Gehazi inherited the Tzoras of Naaman, and he and his son Taylor, they were outside the town. They were outside, they were just outside the town, and they were starving. They didn't have food. At least the people in Shomron had a bit of food. But Gehazi hardly had any. They were going to starve to death there. On one hand, to knock on the door and ask to be let in, they wouldn't be let in, because they were Metzoroim. And a Metzoroh has to stay out, everybody knows, of the city. No, he doesn't. A Metzoroh only has to stay out of a walled city. Any place that's not a walled city, a Metzoroh can be in. He's only thrown out of a walled city, and Shomron was a walled city. Shomron had a king who was over the Avodah Zorah, had people over the Avodah Zorah, but they kept the laws of Tzoras. Isn't that fascinating? Maybe because they didn't like a Metzoroh around. He smells, who knows? But they still...
It was a leper, not a
Metzoroh.
It was a leper.
It says Metzoroh.
That means
we leper. We don't find that the word Tzoras is used with different meanings.
In this case, right?
You find in the Shechin, in the Torah, that can be translated as leprosy, which is what you call leprosy, the medical disease. But generally, Tzoras is a spiritual disease. And he took it from Naaman. Anyway. So what happened was they're outside, and they think we're going to die here. If we stay here, we're going to die. So what are we going to do? So the apostle says, if we go to the town, if we demand to be coming, let's say we barge our way in, we'll die. We're going to die there. If we stay here, we're going to die. The only chance we've got is go to the enemy, who are a bit further out, Machane Aron. Maybe they'll give us a bit of food before we get killed. Maybe. As we are, we're starving to death today. Let's go and ask them to let us in to the enemy camp. So they went to the enemy camp. And what happened? They come in the evening and they get to the enemy camp. There's nobody there. Literally nobody there. So if there's nobody there, what do? They didn't know why that had happened. And in fact, the Pasuk says, Hashem did a nace, made a tremendous noise that only the enemy, the Arab enemy, heard. Nobody else had heard it. This tremendous noise, sound of horses, the sound of chariots, sound of an army, and they felt, Oive, the king of Israel's paid money to the king of Egypt, kings of Egypt, and the Chittim, to get a huge army against us. They're going to just come and wipe us out. So therefore, they didn't even take their horses with them. They literally ran, the whole army ran as fast as they could in whichever direction seemed sensible at the time. And they left everything behind, including all their food. Having done that, so then Gehazi and his sons went in, and they found the food there. Well, they went to one tent, and they ate, and they drank, and then they took out... Oh, it's amazing. I never quite understood this, why people, when they go to battle, take all their jewellery with them. Well, they did. Maybe they captured it in other places, but it was done. Paro went out and with all his stuff. The business Hayom was huge. Say that again?
Makes
it
harder
to lose. The easy way not to lose it is to keep it at home. You got to make five hides in order to get home again. Nope. Anyway, so what happened was that they took lots of things, went to another tent where they weren't hungry anymore. In the second tent, they just took the stuff. They looted it. And then they felt, okay, if they inside the town realise what's happened, and they realise that we are helping ourselves to food and all sorts of goodies and all sorts of jewels and treasures, we're going to be in for it from them, from our own people. In which case, we've got to do the sensible thing. Not because we love you so much, but we're scared stiff that you're going to kill us. So therefore, we've got to go and tell them, look what's happened here. So they did. They went to the gate and they said to the gatekeeper, they told him what had happened. And he passed it on to the other gatekeepers. They sent the message to the king. And the king said, who are you trying to fool? They're hiding. It's an ambush. They want us to realise there's nobody there. And now there's nobody there. They're all going to come out. They're starving, hungry. We'll kill the lot of them. So the king said, no, I'm not believing it. He pulled the other leg. So what happens then is that the king decides, somebody suggests to the king, one of his servants says, look, we've got a few horses left, hardly any, most of the horses are dead. Take five people, five horses, and send them down there to have a look. Worst comes to the worst. The people you're sending know very well their life expectancy is measured in hours or days. That's as much time they can expect to live in the town. But now, if they go down there, they might get killed within minutes. But people who are going to die within hours generally aren't that worried about risking their lives. So therefore, send five people down with five horses to go and see whether it's true or not. If they come back, wonderful. And if they don't come back, what have we lost? As it was, they couldn't find five. Five was a bit much. I think they've got two. Shrei Rechav Susim. Right? Two chariots with horses, that was it. Yeah. Only two people were prepared to risk themselves going into the enemy camp. They went down there and they found that it was absolutely true. And while it was true, they got the message back, there's nobody there. They went having a look beyond the camp and they could see that the enemy had run away down that way and throwing all the things they had with them, throwing everything away as they were going along. So as a result, so the Baruch Hashem, the Shlomo got the message. They went and got all the food and brought it back to the town. And what Elisha had said came absolutely true, is that they had the food to sell in the marketplace. What did the king do? He told the man who had disagreed with Elisha, his own officer, Asher Nishan al Yodo. Nishan al Yodo generally means that when the king bows down to the idol, the Avodah Zorah, somebody helps the man down. Lahavdil, I say Lahavdil, don't quote me without. Lahavdil, I know what it's like, B'liah Norah, as a Shliach Tzibur and Yom Kippur doing Korahim. It's not easy to keep your feet together, go down onto the floor and get up again with your feet together. You can't jump. Right? So Baruch Hashem, if somebody helps you down. So the king as well. The king had somebody to help him down and bring him up again when he did his Korahim to the idol. So this man, great honour, very great honour. So he said, you stand in the gateway and you make sure, just control things, that people don't go crazy, running all over the place, screaming around. Who knows what's going to happen? So he did. He did. But his idea was tariff. They're going to come back with the food. I'm going to charge them. In other words, you want to, you've got to take the food. I'm doing this on behalf of the king, obviously. I'm doing this for the king's sake. The king needs the taxes. So therefore, we'll charge people. And that way we'll put the price up of the food. That was his idea. I'm going to prove Elisha wrong. He said what the price would be. I'm going to show him it's not true. That was a lovely idea he had. And as a result, the Pasuk says, what happened? Vayirmasu ha'om bashar vayomos. The people trampled him to death. Literally ran all over him. You can't understand that people who are starving, hungry, are not going to stand there looking through their pockets to find money. All right? Lo aleinu, anything should happen to anybody like that. You know how many times you hear Rachman Litzan in crowds, where the crowd goes crazy and literally runs. They had in Moron, terrible things that happen, just running into other people. I remember Lahavdil between Moron and the Goyim. Absolutely Lahavdil. But in 1998, Hillsborough in Sheffield, football match, and we're running into human beings. Literally, how much can a human being take? And that's what happened to him. He was the only one. Nobody else got killed. It wasn't that the people went crazy and hundreds of people got killed because they were in the way. No. Only the one person whose chutzpah against Elisha Hanavi. What's the Mishnah say at the end of Sanhedrin? The Mishnah says there about a Novi that there are two things that a Novi can do. That his punishment is Bidei Odom, and there are three things that are Bidei Shomayim. Hamavater al Divrei HaNovi. Somebody who goes against, yes, who takes as unimportant what the Novi has said. If the Novi says the price is going to be one shekel, and you go around doing the bit you can to make it more than one shekel, that's Mevatel Levanovi, Bidei Shomayim. HaKadosh Baruch Hu arranged So this Rosha would be trampled to death, and that's how the Pope Eric ends on that. Okay, Rabbi Osei, thank you very much. Kaddish, anybody? Kaddish? No? Thank you.
Why did you run away and left the sussing behind?